The sun is out and life is good. Thank you for your great attentiveness and good questions and comments. Last time, I hope that our time this afternoon will be equally rich and full. So in the morning, I was asked to talk about helpful models in partnership in theological schools. And this afternoon, what I'll be talking about are some lessons learned from local churches that are trying to infuse an emphasis on faith, work, and economics into the DNA of their congregations, and what those lessons from those churches and their experiences have to say to all of you as folks at seminaries and theological schools. And I want to begin with a sort of before and after kind of a story. It is not a before and after story about diet and fitness. It is a story about a guy that looks an awful lot like Josh Good.
I've heard that before.
Yeah, definitely the after. And it's the story I'm going to spend about the first third of my talk telling is not quite as dramatic a before and after story as this. But nonetheless, I believe it is a very instructive and illuminating story. And if you're listening carefully, the five lessons that I'm going to share later in the presentation, really, you can see all of them in this first story. So the story I want to tell you about is about a large church in Atlanta. It's called Perimeter Church. It's a PCA church. It's a mega church, probably about 5,000 on a weekend. And it's a church that was one of the members of the very first National Vocation Infusion Learning Community, or the VILC, as we refer to it affectionately, in 2012 to 2013. And I'm going to describe the VILC in more detail after I tell the story. For now, all you need to know about the VILC is that it's this initiative that gathers small teams of church leaders, pastors, and marketplace laypeople together in a series of face-to-face retreats over the course of a year, all aimed at helping these church leaders to really understand faith, work, and economics, and then how to go back to their churches and really infuse these concerns into all aspects of their congregational lives. And over the past several years, Perimeter Church has really made major strides in infusing an emphasis on vocational stewardship and on cultural renewal. Now again, it's not a super dramatic before and after story. It's not like before they were in the VILC, they had no clue whatsoever. They didn't even know how to spell work. Now they're after the VILC, they're the best thing on the planet. It's not a story like that, but it is a story about pretty significant change. So, essentially, in the years before their involvement with the VILC, this was a church that had leaders that certainly understood and acknowledged the notion that it was important for people to think about their work in a Christian manner. Certainly, this was a church that threw around the phrase cultural renewal and had some sense, particularly as a church with a pretty big footprint in Atlanta, about what it meant to be a church seeking the good of their city. So not brand new ideas, but neither was there a concentrated, really consistent, really determined emphasis on these sorts of things. The nearest thing that they had sort of going at Perimeter Church before their experience in the VILC was they had an initiative that they called their Work, Live, and Play initiative. It ran for a couple of years 2007 to 2009 and 10. It was under the leadership of one particular staff member. And this staff member saw this initiative largely in shepherding kinds of terms. The idea was, you know, how can the church just do a better job of helping people faithfully follow Jesus in their work, in their family, in their neighborhoods? And in particular, there was an emphasis on friendship evangelism. How can we help our members engage in a winsome fashion for the gospel of Christ among the non-believers among whom they live, work, and play? Well, once that staff member was reassigned around 2009 to some other responsibilities, the phrase live, work, and play continued to, you know, kind of be in the atmosphere at Perimeter, but no longer was there really a programmatic emphasis on this. In 2011, a friend of mine, a wonderful guy named Travis Vaughn, was brought on staff at Perimeter, and he was given the title Director of Cultural Renewal. And again, there was this, you know, the idea of cultural renewal was not a brand new thought, but the church was now beginning to think about it a little bit more, to the point where they would actually, you know, want to have someone that would have responsibility for that. And just several months into his job, Travis heard about this first VILC opportunity. I contacted him and said, Travis would love to have you and a team from Perimeter be a part of what we're doing. And in his application to compete for a slot in the Vocation Infusion Learning community, Travis wrote, "We, certain leaders, are beginning to work through our equipping classes to begin to build a healthier theology of vocation into our resources, as well as rethinking our training to focus on a more narrative approach to scriptural teaching. All of this is more theory right now than actual practice. We're really just at the beginning of a new direction." So Travis wanted to be a part of this learning community because he thought it would be an occasion for him and others from his church to really kind of sink their teeth into this stuff more deeply. Well, after the learning community, so they were part of the learning community all throughout the academic year of 2012-2013. One of the things that happened at Perimeter was that the church really began, the church leadership really began to wrestle in a very intentional and dynamic way with what many of us have called the four-chapter gospel, this meta-narrative of Scripture. We referred to it earlier this morning. This is the paradigm of Scripture that we teach at the VILC. In fact, the whole first retreat is kind of these basic foundations theologically that help to undergird our understanding of God's big story and then how our stories fit into that story. And all of that stuff, Travis and the team kind of brought back to Perimeter. And again, it's not like it was totally new ideas, but really thinking about it in a concentrated way and beginning to think about the practical application of it in a disciplined way, that was new. And after really this intense dialogue and conversation about it, really the penny began to drop among the leadership that, wow, if this is what we really believe theologically, then it needs to begin to really reshape everything that we're doing here at Perimeter. So it's not surprising that in Perimeter's Vocation Infusion Plan, which is this strategic plan document that each church team writes as a result of being in the VILC, they work on it throughout the course of the year. It's like a roadmap or a blueprint for what they're going to do with all this learning back in terms of application at the church. And in the plan, they talked a lot about how they were going to try to teach this theology to their leaders and to the broader to the broader church. And so one of the first things practically that happened at Perimeter was that they began to change how they did church officer training of elders and deacons. Specifically, they began having them read the book As Far as the Curse is Found by Mike Williams, which is kind of an introduction to narrative biblical theology, creation, fall, redemption, consummation. They also brought in Mike Goheen, many of you may have known of Mike's wonderful book, The Drama of Scripture. They brought Mike in for a special weekend to interact with their folks. And one of the real biggies that they did was in 2013, for the first time in 30 years of the church's history, they did a five-week series about vocation. It was called, What Do You Work For? Your Place in the Larger Story. Now, in a lot of churches, sort of a five-week sermon series, that's an important thing, but, you know, people might kind of forget about it after a while. But the thing is, when you're in a really big mega church, a five-week sermon series is actually kind of a big deal. These things get planned out, you know, like a year in advance, and there can be a sense at a mega church that the only thing that really, really matters, that really is valuable, is that which comes from the main stage. The senior pastor has to say it in a big thing on the jumbotron, right? That's the only way it really makes a difference. So this was a big deal that there was this five-week What Do You Work For sermon series. Well, knowing that that was the case, Travis and his team planned very well to capitalize on that opportunity. So they collected and made a series of videos, short videos of congregants in the church who were involved in a variety of marketplace vocations, and they made short little video testimonies, and they showed those video testimonies over the course of that five-week teaching series. One of them was about a guy that works at a big financial brokerage type place, and he's the CFO of it. His name is Doug Guess. And one part of his testimony is that he had used his influence at the company to open up a new program that brought in new employees, and a lot of the new employees were people in the refugee community in Atlanta that Doug and his wife have been ministering to. So it was a way of giving new job opportunities in this industry to these folks. So they had these short video testimonies. They also did a special five-week small group opportunity. So you could, for 5 weeks, you could not go to your regular small group. You could go to a special small group organized by vocation where you were talking about the implications practically of what was being taught about from the main stage about vocation. And they trained the small group leaders to get the small groups really thinking about the creational purposes of their vocation, as well as the challenges in their particular sphere of work that arise as a result of the fall. Well, all of this kind of stuff really created some great energy and began to influence increasingly the adult education ministry at the church. In particular, Travis and his team of marketplace lay leaders developed a course which ran all throughout the summer of 2013 and then again in the summer of 2014, a large class that would have sort of main teaching, and then afterwards there were small breakout groups during each class, and the breakout groups were by people in different, what they call channels of cultural influence. Also in 2014, the church piloted a special program called Restorers Fellowship, which was a 9-month discipleship program for young adult professionals modeled on what Redeemer Church does up in New York City called Gotham Fellows. Perimeter also began collecting vocation demographics. So as, you know, they put together their membership directories and stuff like that, not only collecting people's names and addresses and emails and their birthdates, they started asking people to identify the channel of cultural influence in which their work fit. So people could indicate whether they largely worked in business or government or the media or the arts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What they found as a result of collecting that information was that the three channels in which people at Perimeter were most involved were the business sector, that was 47%, the education sector, that was 21%, and the healthcare sector, that was 19%. And so the next thing they did was they decided to sponsor special, what they called Faith in Work forums in May of 2014, each of which were on those topics. So there was a gospel and business forum that featured Catherine Leary Alsdorf. There was a gospel and education forum that featured a wonderful guy named Sajan George of Matchbox Learning. And then this is a picture of the gospel and healthcare forum, which featured a panel of folks in the healthcare industry. Well, after that, people at the church still wanted more, and so they ended up starting a summer discussion book group that read together every good endeavor. Now, you'll remember that I said that these teams that came to the VILP were composed of pastors and marketplace lay people, and that was, of course, the case for Perimeter. And back at the church, many lay volunteers were involved in the planning and implementation of all these activities that I'm telling you about. One of the marketplace folks came up with the idea for another program, which has now been piloted twice, and it's called the Annual Gospel at Work Day. And this initiative basically involves pairing up each Perimeter pastor and staff member for one whole day with a marketplace person in a variety of industrial sectors, and they go and job shadow them for a day. And of course, the basic goals of this initiative are to foster dialogue, to help the pastors and the church staff members really experience a day in the life of their congregant at work, as well as to hopefully increase the pastor's understanding of workplace reality so that they will just continue to do a better job equipping the saints for their ministry at work 9 to 5. Now, a one-day job shadowing experience may not sound like, well, that's, you know, that seems like a one-off, but they actually, you know, it's a megachurch, so there's a 40-page manual that goes along with the Gospel at Work Day. Everything is very well organized. There's a lot of preparation. You know, there's good implementation. There's good debriefing. This stuff gets taken very seriously. This year, Perimeter Church sort of laid out before the congregation 9 signature initiatives that it plans to pursue over the next several years. Kind of the 9 big things that they're saying are really, really, really important. And a list of 9 may sound long, but that's actually pretty short for a megachurch. And one of the 9 is a multi-million dollar emphasis on building a multi-church leadership center for cultural renewal, which Travis Vaughn will be the director of. Cultural renewal, they're defining as, quote, recovering the biblical purposes of calling and vocation so that our life and work glorifies God, integrates our God-given gifts, desires, and abilities, and serves the common good in the places God sends us. So, in sum, Perimeter Church is a megachurch that went from about 30 years of talking a little bit about vocation and cultural renewal, thinking some about those things, alongside thinking about many, 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 many other things, to becoming a megachurch that now has infused a passion for these topics in its leadership, in its preaching, in its adult education, in its small group life, and in its city-focused mission. Today, Perimeter Church is taking the flourishing of the city of Atlanta through the transformation of its various social sectors more seriously now than ever before. It's been a pretty big journey. And I, for one, am excited to see what the next 5 years is going to bring. Well, I began with that story about Perimeter because Greg asked me to talk some about the lessons that we have learned through the experience of the Vilk and following the churches that have been in the Vilk, about their journeys of learning about faith, work, and economics for the common good, and then going back to those congregations and trying to really infuse that teaching and that emphasis into the life of the church. And so I'm going to share with you five lessons learned, all of which have been illustrated already in this story about Perimeter. First, a quick word about the National Vilk. As I said 10-15 minutes ago, it's a learning community, small teams, usually three people, a pastor and a couple of marketplace lay people, getting together over the course of a year. We've had 42 congregations in total go through the program, and we've generally had them meet four times over the course of the year in various face-to-face meetings. The objectives of the Vilk are essentially to get the pastors preaching more and better, preaching and teaching on this stuff better. It's about building a network of relationships and new friendships among all these different churches so that they can share their experiences and their best practices and maybe partner together down the road. We're very interested in not only affecting the lives of the pastors, but also really encouraging and influencing the lives of the marketplace people, that they would go back and themselves practice faith at work in some more robust ways. We're all about application. We want these churches to not just learn this stuff, but go back and figure out what it means for liturgy and for adult education and for youth ministry and for all of this kind of stuff. And we want them to really take seriously the equipping of the scattered church to help their folks advance the common good in and through their daily labors. So what have we learned? Well, we've learned a whole lot from the Vilk. And honestly, for me personally, this has really been one of the most rich and meaningful and rewarding professional experiences for me. I'm kind of an ideas to action gal. And so, you know, I wrote that book, Kingdom Calling, some years ago. And I wrote it for people just like the people that are in the Vilk. And the fact that they come and they want to learn more about this stuff and then they want to actually go home and do something about it, that's pretty gratifying. So we've learned these lessons, and what I'm going to do is go through the lessons, and after each one, kind of talk a little bit about what does that lesson sort of mean for all of you? What might be some practical implications to your own school's equipping of future church leaders? So the first lesson is that what we've discovered is that leaders really need exposure and education by way of an experiential pedagogy. This will not surprise you, given the presentation from this morning. You know, when we started the Vilk, it was very deliberate on our part to have an incarnational show-and-tell pedagogy. It was very important to us that we not just talk about these ideas, we wanted to show them. We wanted to show them how these ideas get embodied in real individuals and in real institutions. Readings are great, but experiences are even better. Now, a friend of mine, Chris Robertson, and I, every year, we do exit interviews at the end of the program with each of the Vilk members. And every year, the readings are highly rated, and that's gratifying again, since one of my books is one of the ones that they read. Tom, you'll be gratified to know that they like your book. Greg, you'll be glad to know they like your paper. The readings are important, and they get a lot out of the readings. But the experience has to be more than reading alone. They've got to see it. They've got to talk about it. They've got to push back. They've got to hear additional perspectives. I like the kind of simple, straightforward way that one of our pastors said it in the exit interview just this past year. The Vilk was more than just hearing ideas, it was experiencing them. The venues provided different ways of seeing the teaching actually worked out. Now, I have to tell you, that's a slight bit scary to stand up in front of a group of full-time educators and talk about pedagogy, okay? So I realize that you all probably know a lot more about it than I do, because that's not my full-time job. All I can tell you is that our consistent experience in the Ville has sort of proven what Mike Breen's little triangle diagram shows. And that is that in order to get to innovation or transformation, you need more than just information. Information is really important, but then information and ideas have to be embedded, modeled, and made visible so that people can see them and can imitate them. And it's the practice of imitating these things over time that really leads to new changes and to true transformation. So what we do in the Vilk is we try to expose our folks to where good stuff is going on. So we literally take them to Phoenix, Arizona. One of the things we take them to Phoenix to see is something called the Surge School. Surge is a 9-month intensive discipleship program that roots its participants in the Bible's meta-narrative, helps them find their place within it, and then really walks them through how to live that out in the various callings of their life. Surge is a wonderful program that began in 2008. They've had over 1,000 graduates now. Kind of the lead church is a wonderful church in Phoenix called Redemption Church. And what we do is we bring in panels of Surge participants and graduates to talk about what difference this program has made in their life so that our folks can hear that. And I'm glad to say that at least 3 of our churches are experimenting or have implemented something similar to the Surge School back in their own communities, or have come to Phoenix again to kind of learn more about it and see how they might do something similar. We also take our people on field trips to go out and see examples of marketplace Christians who are living out their faith in really creative, holistic ways. The gentleman in the plaid is a really neat guy named Joe Johnston. He's a farmer and a businessman. He's the founder of a unfortunately named but really cool community called Agritopia. It's a planned community. It's about 30 minutes outside of Phoenix. Observers have called it an agrihood instead of a neighborhood, an agrihood. It's a place of farm-to-table living, of sustainable organic farming. It's a place where artisanship is taken seriously and where there are business entrepreneurs who are artisans being supported. And it's a place with a really beautifully designed housing stock that's quite heterogeneous because it has price points for a variety of income levels of folks. And so literally we took our people out there and on a beautiful sunny day we tromped all around the community called Agritopia, and we heard Joe Johnson talk about how his faith had influenced the development of this vision and how it expresses itself by the value that this community places on diversity, on inclusion, on beauty, on sustainability, and on neighborliness. It's a great experience. So, what's the lesson here for you all? Well, I think it's basically what we talked about this morning, right? Wherever you can integrate into your pedagogy more and more experiential, hands-on, creative stuff, the more and more you should do so. Many of you are already doing it with the Asbury Project, with the internship, with all sorts of neat things going on. I've seen other examples where seminary teachers have brought in marketplace Christian leaders as guest speakers into their classrooms, or actually taking kids out of the classroom and taking them on field trips to see Christian business people at work in their own environments. This is the kind of thing that we need to be doing. The second lesson that we've learned is that it's really important for pastors and congregants to learn about this stuff together. It's really important to have those teams be composed not only of clergy. It's not enough just to get the pastors to understand this vision of FWE. We've got to get the lay people in the church actively learning it with them preferably in real time. The lay leaders have to experience what the pastor is learning and experiencing. They have to catch the fire. They have to catch the vision. That's what brings about really solid implementation back at the church. But not only does this bringing together of marketplace lay people with their pastors to learn about these things, not only does it help with implementation back at the church, as hopefully you picked up on in the story about Perimeter, but it also, in some instances, revises the way that the pastors actually conceive of how they are going to teach and equip their people. It helps them to recognize and to get in real-time feedback from congregants that they're doing this with about their ideas, about the kinds of ways that they should teach or things that they should teach or places where they should lead or places where they should take the back seat. The experience of the three-person team 1 year from a church called Colonial Village Baptist Church in Michigan was particularly instructive. Their pastor, a guy named Brian Morgan, had been at the church about 7 years before the Vilk, and he said, you know, I understood a lot of this stuff that we heard at the Vilk. I got some of that at seminary, so it wasn't all brand new to me. But he had really struggled to teach it effectively and preach it effectively and to get the rest of the church to catch it and to care about it. And he had tried to get some of his marketplace leaders and lay leaders to go with him to local events that were available, little luncheons or seminars, etc. But it was difficult for them to do that. However, when he gave the invitation to folks to join him to be part of this learning community, that was actually an easier sell, even though it was a way bigger commitment. Because there was this sense on the marketplace leaders of, oh, this is a national conversation, and we're going to travel around, and we're going to meet real people and see real models and check out real things. It's like the seriousness of it like was way raised up. And then they realized, okay, I'll participate in that. And then what happened was that, you know, these marketplace folks were learning right alongside their pastors. And what happened for Brian was that he would talk with his two marketplace people, a guy named Andy and a guy named Brian, and the pastor would say, well, when we get back at the church, you know, we should do this kind of thing, and I could do this, and I could do that, and they would sort of stop him and say, you know, actually, Brian, when you do it, it's kind of like up here. And not a lot of the people really get it. Let us teach it. We'll make it more accessible. Wow. And so the pastor was like, wow, you know what? You're probably right. I have a quote here from Brian. For Andy and Brian to be part of the Vilk is exciting for me because they've taken on the task of making all this understandable. They've experienced it, and they can teach it to other folks in ways that I can't possibly do. Another associated benefit was the fact that although Brian had been there about 7 years, the church is actually really old. And Brian's a fairly young guy in his 30s. One of his marketplace helpers was an older gentleman from the congregation who'd been there a really long time and was an elder at the church. And when that guy caught this vision, and when that guy was at the congregation saying, this is important, this really matters, this needs to be central, people listened. Not that they hadn't listened to the pastor, but there was a little bit more of a, well, maybe that's just kind of that young whippersnapper up there talking about that, right?
And new ideas.
So, pastors and the lay leaders learning together. What can you do? Again, many of you are already doing it. Whether it's bringing together business people with folks from the seminary at Gordon Conwell together to be involved in business and entrepreneurial activities. But you can assign students to work with marketplace leaders at their churches. Work together rather than saying you develop a small group curriculum, make the assignment, develop it in conjunction with three other marketplace lay leaders at the church. You can support really wonderful DMIN projects like Kent Duncan's. And as I mentioned earlier this morning, one of the things that was fun when I talked with Kent was that, you know, it was sort of his project and he had to come up with it. But he's very careful to really talk with the blue-collar folks in his congregation about what was going to work. For example, he initially thought he was going to do, I think, a 6 or an 8 week sermon series. And basically, the folks said, you know what, make it 4. Like, you know, we don't need to go on and on and on forever, you know. There were really important, tangible pieces of feedback that the folks in the pews were giving him in real time as he put together this initiative. Another thing was that he paid a lot more attention to visuals. They actually had t-shirts made up. They came up with a little logo for the 9 to 5 till kingdom come. You know, they did things that Kent might not have thought of on his own, but that listening to the very people he was trying to serve helped him to teach it more effectively. You could also encourage your students, to invite as they go on professional development activities and retreats and places where they're going to learn, you know, to see if they would be willing to invite some of the lay leaders along with them. And I'm sure there are many other things that we can talk about that you could do as well. The third lesson learned I can do pretty quick, because it's basically about teaching critical theological points. What needs to happen in order to well equip the scattered church? And the really just the big point here is that theology actually does really matter, and there are certain foundational convictions that are just absolutely crucial to lay down if the church is really going to make progress. Critical theological foundations about the goodness of creation, about the fact that God's mission in the world is not only to save souls, but to renew all things, about that the church is on a mission joined to Jesus' mission, bringing about transformation and renewal of both individuals and families, as well as whole communities, and influencing social structures and cultural practices. And convictions about discipleship, that discipleship isn't some privatized thing, but it's for the whole of our life. And it's for our public life as well as our family life. And this kind of teaching, the content has to be there. And then there really needs to be specific emphasis on inculcating these critical theological convictions among the church leadership. Again, remembering the example for Perimeter, they took time to teach specifically the elders and the deacons. They really got into this theology. They needed the leaders to really get it. So the practical implication here, do it. Teach it. But not just teach it. Teach it in the way that Paul Williams will tell you how to teach it tomorrow morning. Because he's not just going to talk about the fact that you have to teach it. He's going to talk about why we need to teach it, how we can be teaching it better, because there must be a little something wrong with how we're teaching it, if not as many people as we want are really getting it. So be listening for the wisdom that Paul will share tomorrow. The fourth lesson learned, although the theology is critical and preaching is really, really important, preaching isn't enough. There has to be celebration as well. Again, hopefully not a surprise lesson learned if you were listening carefully to the Perimeter story. Because I said that they had a 5-week teaching series, but not only did they do that, they made all those videos that showcased people in the congregation that held them up on the main stage, on the big platform, on the Jumbotron, talking about what they did and how their faith was influencing their roles in their particular vocational sectors. It's really important to celebrate it. Now, one of the things that's kind of interesting, the Barna Research Group, as many of you may know, has done a wide variety of surveys. One they did on behalf of Letourneau University. They did it in 2011 and repeated it in 2014. And they basically were trying to find out about, you know, how much people in the pews were hearing about kind of faith and work from the pulpit. Were they hearing more sermons on work? And as you can see in this diagram, they found out that 1 in 4 pastors reported preaching sermons that address work. So 26% were preaching on it in 2011, and now almost 9 out of 10 say that they're preaching on work. So apparently we've got more preaching going on, and that's a really, really good thing and a really important thing. At the same time, the same Barna study showed that only 22% of churchgoers see their work as being as important as what the pastor or the missionary does. So there appears to be a disconnect. Even though we're getting more teaching and preaching on this, which is really important, somehow that's not quite all the way landing in the hearts and minds of the people that are hearing it. Because there's still 78% who kind of feel like second-class citizens in their vocation. So there's this gap. Jim Mullins is a pastor who was in our second learning community. And he says this, at our church, we preach the Lordship of Christ over all aspects of life. We offer classes on the theology of work, and we repeat our favorite phrase every Sunday, all of life, all for Jesus. But the message about the broad scope of the gospel didn't seem to be fully getting through to the point of helping people actually shape their work by their faith and see their work's connection to their faith and to God's big story. I realized that the issue wasn't with what our people heard, but with what they saw. Our congregants frequently heard teaching about the importance of vocation and all of life discipleship, but they weren't seeing anyone's work apart from the pastoral, missionary, or nonprofit work publicly celebrated. So we've got to celebrate it. We've seen people in our vilk do that by having times of commissioning, whether it's business owners, whether it's public school teachers. We've seen it in terms of pastors coming on site at offices and workplaces owned by their congregants and offering a liturgical blessing, just like you would do like a house blessing, but only doing it as an office blessing. As well as thinking well about visuals in the church. This is a picture of a visual that's up at Tom Nelson's church. You know, as you know, one of the neat ways that Tom talks about creation, fall, redemption, consummation is he uses ought, is, can, will. And this is a picture of a visual that they have up at Christ Community. There's other churches that have big pictures of their folks at work. So not just the Hall of Missionaries pictures, which is really great and we should have those, but also the Hall of Ordinary Missionaries on work every day in their jobs. So what can seminaries do? Well, how about providing folks with songs and prayers and liturgies? Bring in somebody like Tom Nelson to help your people think about how to reshape church culture. Assign your students the job of writing their own commissioning services or their own prayers or liturgies. Assign your students something like, you know, interview 5 congregants or make a video from someone from your church. All right, the last one, and by the way, I don't have a big conclusion. I'm just going to do this last one, mention a couple of practical implications, and then we'll go straight to Q&A and commentary. And that is churches that are infusing faith, work, and economics effectively are actually doing stuff. And again, that sounds kind of silly and trite, but it's actually not, because for 30 years, Perimeter Church talked about it. They didn't actually do anything about it. Until it lands, until it gets legs, it's not going to happen. There's a handout in your folder where I have for you, I listed 25 different specific new practices, new doings that churches in the Vilk have put into action. I won't go through that whole thing. But they're doing things like providing practical help for un- and underemployed folks. Living Hope Church is in the Vilk in Chicago, and they have a ministry to the unemployed. They're doing things like having small groups focused on vocational faithfulness, as well as putting together vocational affiliation groups. This is a group called Justice Matters that takes place at one of the Vilk churches from the very first year that's a church out in Raleigh-Durham. They're doing things like having short-term mission trips that are vocationally based, so sending all their artists off on a short-term mission trip or sending all their IT people off on a short-term mission trip, as well as having missions conferences that not only highlight the great work that needs to be done abroad, but also that highlight what James Hunter calls Great Commission, or what I call, he says, Great Commission 2.0. That's James's famous quote about the Great Commission needs to be understood not only in geographical terms, go and make disciples of all the nations, as in Peru and Pakistan, etc., but go and make disciples in all the social sectors of the world, in law and finance and business. So these are some of the practical things, and many more are listed on that handout. So what can seminaries do? Well, one thing that would be really helpful, personally to me, would be assign your students to find out about these doings that churches are doing and write little case studies about them. Why did they start it? How did they get it together? How hard was it to do? What are they actually doing? What's the impact been? What evaluation questions are they asking? That's a great assignment. By the way, if they write a case study, please send it to me. I'm collecting them. Create independent study classes in which students, the assignment is for them to write a strategic plan, a blueprint for a new ministry that they would start at their church. Or help the students see how to infuse these ideas into the existing ministries of the church. So how assign them to think about, okay, we've been talking in our class about the importance of faith, work, and economics. How is that going to shape what you do in your youth ministry? Write a paper about that. How is that going to shape what you do with the missions team? Write a little idea about that. How is that going to shape what you should do in women's ministry, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? So these are just a few of the kinds of things that churches can do. So those are my five lessons learned. And the room is really hot. I'm sorry about that. I don't know why. Hopefully it's not just my hot air. But we can now move to some Q&A and discussion.